Okay, so I was telling you that we're very shortly going to be talking to Britain's strictest teacher, and we have her on the line. Her name is Catherine Babal Singh. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
I pronounced your surname correctly?
Sorry?
Did I pronounce your surname correctly?
Yes, you did a very good job. Well done.
Fantastic.
Married to you.
I understand that you're actually New Zealand born, is that right?
That's right, I was born in Auckland 44 years ago, so it's wonderful to be able to come back and see it again.
How is it that you have earned the label of Britain's strictest teacher?
Well, you know, these silly labels. I mean, I suppose we're quite strict as a school, and a lot of people come to visit us to see the great strides that we're making with our children. It's an inner city school, so you can imagine it's the kind of school that you might see in Hollywood films where children might be involved in gangs, or, you know, there are other children outside who carry knives, and, you know, it's inner city London. And yet you come into our school and it's an oasis of calm where the children are all excited about learning, and 80% of hands up are up in the lessons, and teachers from across the country come and visit and say, how come the children are like this? And you know, one of the reasons I'd say is because of our behavior system.
Your behaviour systems, which means what? That you have a strict discipline system?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things that people find a bit, eye-opening is that we have silence in the corridors. People think, oh, my goodness, how can you ask for silence? But, you know, it's so perfectly normal at school. Nobody questions it. It's not oppressive in the slightest. If anything, it's liberating, and that's because it allows the children to move very quickly from one lesson to the next. And anyone who's been a teacher knows what it's like when the children come in 10 minutes late, and it's disruptive, and you think, well, it's only 10 minutes, but actually, if that's 10 minutes in every lesson, by the end of the day, you've missed an entire lesson. And for those children who come from our poorest and most disadvantaged homes, it really matters when they miss out on a lesson every day. They don't access the normal cultural things that a middle-class child would get at home. So you go home, you sit down, you have dinner with your parents, you talk about the politics of the day. You might discuss geography and science and history without even realizing it. And you go to see art galleries and museums. But a poor child doesn't even necessarily have any books at home. And so it's only at school that they access what you might call the kind of cultural currency of the country that will enable them to be able to read newspapers when they're older and understand the politics of the day and so on. So it's just so important, I'd say, for us to make use of every minute of the time that we've got with the kids. And our children love it. You know, they if you came, you would see really happy children who are excited about learning, and this idea that, you know, people think it's oppressive, you know, but it's not. It's liberating. And you would find our children are just so resilient and so
Catherine,
inspired.
How do you enforce the silence in the corridors? What's the punishment?
Well, I have to say, it's very rare that they would speak. If they did, they would get a demerit. And if they get 2 demerits, they would get a detention, which means 20 minutes of doing what is essentially the equivalent of homework. They basically do some work for 20 minutes, so it's not a big deal. But it's enough to make them think, oh, well, I won't talk. Plus, it's not, I need to stress that it's not the threat of the demerit that stops them from talking. It's the fact that they're so determined to get to their next lesson that stops them from talking. Because they're moving very quickly with purpose.
Yeah.
To get to their lesson.
Catherine, I understand that some of the successes in your school include virtually illiterate kids suddenly doing extremely well. Is that the case?
Well, it's not sudden. I mean, and one of the things I would really want to encourage schools in New Zealand to do, because I know some of them use phonics and some of them don't, and I think phonics, breaking down, and this is for all learning, you need to break things down to the smallest syllable. So with reading, you need the alphabet and you need phonics, which you can then build up, and it means children can then read any word out there. And when we get children who come with 6 or 7 year old reading age and they are 11 years old, within 2 years we catch them up with their chronological reading age, when normally children like that, I mean, in Britain, 20% of children leave school at 16 functionally illiterate. And that's because, sadly, you know, the school system in some way has failed them. And so we are traditionalists, you know, we believe in lots of reading and writing and maths and going back to basics. And that's the kind of thing that people come to see at our school. Certainly in England, I'd say that there's more of a trend these days to move towards more traditional methods, having discovered that progressive, more modern methods have have failed in certain ways.
Well, we are. New Zealand is in the midst of an experiment called NCEA, and it's seen as progressive. It's taking away exams,
yes.
And I can see, you know, we're slipping down the rankings in terms of literacy and numeracy. Yes. If you could change anything about the New Zealand education system, what would it be?
Well, I'd change that. I'd stop the direction in which you're going. I feel like I want to ring the warning bells for you and say, no. You need to turn it around. You need more traditionalism. You need more teachers standing at the front of the class, children in desks, in rows, listening to their teacher and looking up to him or her and learning from him or her. You know, they are the fountain of knowledge, and they need to give their knowledge to the children. And the focus of the lesson should be knowledge and memory. It's through learning your times tables by heart that you are then later able to do more complex problem solving, because you can draw out the knowledge from your long-term memory and apply it to those problems to solve them. Sadly, I think it's a bit of a mistake of the progressives to imagine that that stuff that's learned by heart is not useful.
Yeah.
That's how you do complex thinking. That's how you become creative. It's precisely by learning things by heart and by practice. You need practice over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I know that in New Zealand at the moment, you know, you're looking at project-based learning and so on, and I think it's a bit of a mistake. I think that you need to backtrack and come and see us. You know, if you don't believe me, I always say, I mean, of course, it's a very long way for you all to come, but come and see our school and see the incredible progress that our children make.
We can't all come, Catherine, but I will book in a trip for our Minister of Education, Chris Hipkins, and it might be his, I don't know, he might be able to finish his schooling while he's there. Catherine, thank you very much for joining us. That's Catherine Babalsing, who is a Kiwi-born woman who is now considered the strictest teacher in Britain.